Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet. We talk about things like movies, TV, sci-fi, fantasy, books, knights, kingdoms, numbers, sci-fi TV shows that explore what it takes to resist tyranny and how awesome Julie Davies is. I am Dan Selke. I'm here with Daniel Roman. We are two men named Dan. We are nerds to talk about things. Daniel Roman, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm excited to be here as always. I'm curious what numbers we're going to talk about today.
Seven.
But aside, wait, which ones? Which ones did you say?
Seven, because Seven Kingdoms.
Seven. Oh, yeah, that's right. Ha ha. Seven, like the number of kingdoms. I swear we are a Game of Thrones podcast, but also a podcast that talks about a lot of other things. And we're going to talk about many of them today, including not just, you know, sci-fi shows about rebellion, but about not robots, security constructs looking for their place in the universe, because we have an early Murderbot review today. So we've got exciting stuff. I'm very excited. I'm gonna stop rambling. How are you, Dan?
I'm well. Don't forget, we also have exclusive interviews with incredibly powerful and influential and successful fantasy authors.
Yes, that's true. We're going to talk a little bit about that shortly, because it has been an exciting week at winteriscoming.net. If you haven't been tuning in, why haven't you been visiting the site? Maybe start doing that so you don't miss out on the things we're going to talk about.
Subscribe and like.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about how much we have to talk about. Where do you want to start today? Shall we start in Westeros?
We shall. We should start with sadness. So we get some bad news out of the way first. I'm just sorry. Let's just go ahead and dive into it.
Yeah.
Something is wrong at Warner Bros. Discovery. I feel like we've known this for a while. We've seen it kind of leak around the edges with reports of, you know, movies that are already complete being canceled and seasons of TV shows like House of the Dragon being cut down from 10 episodes to 8 in the middle, well, or right before production, necessitating vast rewrites. They just said that The Last of Us, you know, this really big hit show they have, that they're going to film the third season next year, which makes me think, okay, wait a minute. So the show's going to, the second season's going to end like next week, and then the third season's going to start filming next year, which means that the third season might come in like at least 2 years and probably more. What are you doing? Today they announced they're changing the title of their streaming service back from Max to HBO Max again.
Who could have seen
it
that
was
coming?
HBO Go, then it was HBO Max, then it was Max. Now it's HBO Max again. What is happening over there?
Yeah.
Who's in charge of this place? Anyway, I'm mad because the thing that we're really mad about is that they announced that A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, this new Game of Thrones prequel show that we're excited about, based on the Tales of Duncan Egg novellas by George R. R. Martin, which was going to premiere on HBO and HBO Max sometime this year, probably in the fall, has been pushed back to 2026.
Yeah.
And they didn't say why. They didn't really go into it. Apparently they showed a trailer off of the upfront presentation. But it sucks, because we know they've already filmed it. We know it's pretty much in the can. We know George R. R. Martin, others have said they really love what they've seen.
Seen all the episodes.
Like it's pretty much done, but they're delaying it for what, in my addled, angry state, I can only assume is some kind of managerial incompetent situation. Because there seems to be quite a lot of that at Warner Bros. Discovery. And I've actually vacillated on whether they're incompetent hatchet men or thrifty geniuses. Right now, I am definitely on the side of incompetent hatchet men.
Yeah, totally. And to be clear here, I think the issues that a lot of the issues that HBO is facing right now are like top-down issues. Like, I don't know. I think David Zaslav, who's the CEO of Warner Bros. Discovery, making a lot of really bad decisions for HBO specifically in the name of let my big, large company prosper by, you know, throwing low quality reality television onto HBO Max and renaming it Max so that Discovery content can live on there. Like, that was kind of the impetus for the HBO Max rebrand, even though everyone and their brother knew it was a terrible idea, because HBO Max was one of the few services to come out of the streaming wars actually as a recognizable, valuable brand. And they canned it. for the sake of Discovery's failing reality shows that weren't doing well enough on their own app to justify keeping it. So, you know, it's interesting to hear you say, are they thrifty geniuses? Are they incompetent? I think we saw their ass a little bit today. Sorry to use the bad language, but like the incompetent side of it, to go back to HBO Max like 2 years later. And this Night of the Seven Kingdoms thing, they wrapped filming in September 2024. It's a 6-episode season. Mm-hmm. George R. R. Martin has seen rough cuts as of, I think, April of this year.
Yeah, like earlier this year.
He talked about it already. He'd seen rough cuts of all 6 episodes. There are no dragons. There are no crazy special effects. There's some jousting, you know, jousting effects, maybe. They need a CGI in some mud. This seems very clearly to me to be a decision of HBO didn't have enough big shows slated for next year. So they're holding this back for their 2026 slate. I think it's a terrible decision. It sounds like you do, too.
Well, I'm frustrated because I like symmetry and order and organization. But one of the reasons that the Max HBO Max thing is so frustrating, it's not just that they changed from HBO Max to Max. Like, it seemed like a dumb idea. It's that if you want to present a powerful front to the world and you want people to know, think that you know what you're doing, you have to be consistent. You have to make a plan and stick to it. It's not even so much some of the bad decision making. It's that it's this weak decision making. It's like you say one thing one day, say the next thing the next day. Like, no one has confidence in this. I don't like it. And again, the House of the Dragon cut down from 10 episodes to 8 thing, and you could tell, was another example of like, it seems like you put in the cart before the horse. It seems like you shouldn't do that if you want to turn out a good product. And you'd figure people would know that. And I think people at HBO probably do know that, but they have to take orders from folk who are not TV makers. I know David Zaslav doesn't be in TV, but I don't know what he's up to. I guess the $100 million bonuses have gone to his brain or something. So someone in the chat said they're trying to spin off HBO and sell it. Fine, do it. Jesus, like, sell it to someone who knows what to do with it, or spin it off into their own company. I'm frustrated right now a little bit. I mean, at the end of the day, I do believe that if the show is good, the show is good. And it looks like Night of the Seven Kingdoms is going to be good. I also agree with people in the chat who are saying people lose interest over time. Yeah. They just do. And I don't know how the studios, or rather their parent companies, I guess, don't get that. I don't care how popular your show is. If you have to wait 3 years between seasons, people are going to fall off. People are going to go through puberty. They're going to get married. They're going to have kids. They're going to have other things happen in their life that are going to distract them from your TV show. So try and get it out in a timely manner. Make it a priority. Which, by the way, if I want to put a positive spin on the Night of Seven Kingdoms thing, I can... The one thing I can, theory I can kind of spin, is that I know they said that they were looking into shooting the seasons 2 and 3 back to back to make sure the little kid who plays Egg doesn't, you know, grow a beard and chest hair before the show is over and start to look unrealistic in the role of a child. And maybe I'm thinking, okay, there technically isn't an expectation for the show yet because it hasn't aired. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't miss it. It hasn't been here. So maybe... Again, this is me just trying to spin it in some kind of positive way. I'm thinking like, well, okay, maybe we can air it next year and then we can have the other 2 seasons ready in a more timely manner. So we won't have to wait that long. Because if they aired it this year and then they had to wait 2 years, that would be frustrating. But that kind of assumes that they care about long waits.
Yes.
And I don't think I see much evidence of that.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me. And I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Yeah, and I think the flip side of that is if they're pushing it back, if the renewal for Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is at all dependent on the performance of the first season, then it could mean they're waiting longer to start filming seasons 2 and 3.
Unless it's not. I don't know.
Unless it's not.
It's a cheaper show.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know. Just the HBO Go to HBO Max to Max to HBO Go thing is so embarrassing.
Don't forget HBO Now. I will not stand for this HBO Now.
I did forget HBO Now. Wow. God.
Yeah. Man, so
that's crazy.
Let's hit a couple of comments. So Valoria said, how long are the episodes again? That hasn't been confirmed yet.
Yes.
Duncan Egg, you know, those are novellas, so it's not that long a book, you know, it's only about 150 pages, but we don't know. They haven't said publicly how long the episodes are. Ben Jack, you just made me put my head in my hands when I read this comment a minute ago, which was Casey Bloys did a great podcast interview a few weeks ago, all about how they were pivoting away from trying to be a Netflix competitor and back to being what HBO Go, here you go, Dan, what HBO Go was, which was a prestigious content app.
Okay.
And I think that's great. I think they should have never done the pivot in the first place, because that was what it was before they renamed it Max. Like, that's kind of, it's very, very similar to what happened with Disney Plus, in my opinion. Where Bob Chapek, the new CEO of Disney, that then got canned because the previous one said, oh my God, this dude's wrecking everything. And he came back, Bob Iger. Chapek pressured Marvel and Star Wars, Lucasfilm, to announce like 20 shows that were coming to Disney Plus to get people invested in their streaming app. And it burnt everyone out on those things. It led to a bunch of mediocre shows. Like Marvel has said this exact same thing as Bloys is saying here, which is we're pivoting away from the stupid thing we probably shouldn't have done, but did because of corporate pressures, which Bloys didn't explicitly say that. But that is, I think if we read between the very clear stuff between the lines, kind of what happened here. So yeah, it's an embarrassing day for HBO, I would say, for Warner Brothers.
The reason I say sometimes I think they might be onto something is because some of the things they've done, I actually do think are probably worth doing for the wider industry. Like, sure, they weren't afraid to put some of their stuff like Dune on Netflix. I think it's probably a decent idea.
Yeah.
Like
Dune,
okay,
doesn't. Yes, totally agree.
You don't need to hoard everything. You can have it for a while. You can still be successful while still like getting exposure for your stuff. And I think they're one of the first ones to really try that. Like, I can't see Disney putting, you know, like The Mandalorian on Netflix. That's not going to happen.
Sure.
But, like Warner Discovery was like willing to branch out a little bit. I heard that The Pitt, an HBO show, is going to be in like TNT, is going to air in a while, but it's already like, you know, the Maxers have already watched it. I think that's fine. I think it's probably a good idea. Get some more money, get some more exposure. And then the stuff like this, though, I see it and like someone said, no one's steering the ship. That's when it feels like that.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a very good point, and credit where it's due. I think branching out and not keeping everything exclusive for Max has been good for them. I do think taking some things down so that they're not on Max at all has been bad. Like thinking of, you know, like I know Westworld gets shit on a bunch, but like the fact that that was one of HBO's premier shows and you can't even watch it on HBO Max if you want to. And there are a lot of shows like that they've pulled off. So I, you know, it's kind of like one step forward, one step back. They do a thing that it's like, that's kind of savvy. Mm-hmm. And then another thing where it's like, what were you thinking? This was a bad idea. So
if Bloys is right and they really are pivoting back to being like a premium content destination, and if someone can get the scheduling in order, I'm all for it. I do think something seems to be, again, we talked about it before, how there's like this sugar rush, gold rush period, sure, where everyone was throwing money at everything and it was just like, go, 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 go. And now they're trying to find a new equilibrium. Well, the finding has been a little rocky.
Yeah.
And not just for them. And there was COVID and there, blah, 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 blah. And David Zaslav gets paid $100 million bonuses. That's where we stop. Somebody stop that. They can't stop it.
Yeah, I mean, what Nicole is saying here. So Nicole, this is a bit of background for your comment, which is Max didn't need to buy every TLC show. Now all I see is Sister Wives and Dr. Pimple Popper when I open Max. And this is, you know, they didn't buy these shows. Essentially, Warner Brothers and Discovery merged, and then David Zaslav, the CEO, decided to merge their streaming apps. So again, all of the reality television on the Discovery app, which was failing, which is why it got canned and they shuffled everything off it, got moved to HBO Max and they rebranded it just Max. So this is why, like the comment you said about who's steering the ship, like these are bigger corporate decisions. Like Casey Bloys has been at HBO since before these things. So that's why
Seen on the ball.
Yeah, that's why, like, I don't necessarily think these are HBO problems as much as corporate megastructure consolidation problems, you know, with these very large companies monopolizing their quarters of the industry. That's why, like, we're gonna be watching the new Alien show on Disney Plus. Like, that just confuses some part of me, because it could not be further away from the Disney brand, something like Alien. So I think this is one of the many problems that they're running into with these, is they're trying to make it their streaming services for everyone instead of good for the niche audiences they were serving.
You can't all be Netflix. Sorry about it.
It's true.
Three quick points to wrap up. One, I'm sorry that we're not going to get the really pleasant Westeros release model that seemed like it could have worked, like a year of Friends of Seven Kingdoms and a year of House of the Dragon. That could have worked.
Do you think they'll push House of the Dragon?
I don't want to think about it. I'm not sure. I don't know. Fair. I don't know, man. You would think no, but who knows? B, I had a B, but I forgot it. Three. Oh, the B was like, whenever I go into Max, like the reality shows are almost never like the most, like the top 10 most watched shows. It's almost never one of the, it's always something HBO is producing.
Of course.
Some kind of good thing. And C, Dr. Pimple Popper, I've never watched it. So the entire thing is what? Someone explain this show to me. Like, it's about a doctor. Is it just him treating acne conditions? That's the entire thing?
I don't know. So I have only walked in and out on when this has been on at my mother-in-law's, who does enjoy a bit of reality television. What little I have gleaned is it seems like a person, I don't even know if they're, like, are they a real doctor? I don't know.
I don't know.
Who goes around and finds the grossest, nastiest pimples they can pop and does it for television. And every time it airs, we inch closer as a society to the movie Idiocracy, is my take.
Yeah. I don't love that, though. I mean, like, I don't... Reality TV's fine. I've watched my share of House Hunters.
Fine. Okay, House Hunters. But wait. There's a big difference between House Hunters, which is, look at this cool thing. We're going around looking at houses. We're in the real estate market. We're maybe giving you inspo. And like, look at this gross thing. We're going to pop it on TV for you. So,
I mean, I think people don't seek out gross stuff. There's some gross stuff on YouTube and Twitter and stuff. Like, I'm not going to say like I don't want to come up with an example right now, but I don't know. I don't want to get too harsh on proper, but I am curious.
This is our homework. We can watch it. And Ben Jack said an interesting thing here. In that same interview with Casey Bloys, he talked about how they added all those reality shows and no one watched them on there.
Seems like it, right?
Of course.
Obviously. I mean, they are made for like, you know, $8 and a dream. So if folk aren't watching them in large numbers, I don't think it matters as much.
Yeah, the whole reason they went there was because they weren't doing well on their own app. But that's not why people were subscribed to HBO Max to watch those kinds of shows. Anyway,
as much respect as I do have for Dr. Pimple Popper at all, it's true that you don't subscribe to HBO app to watch him.
Read the room, Dr. Pimple Popper. Know when you will be a hit at the party and when you're maybe in the wrong building.
I'll Google this later. Anyway, what else
shall we carry on,
Dan?
Okay, so very briefly, I want to touch on this because we have an exciting thing going on at the site this week.
We do.
Which is that it is our week of Sanderson. Essentially, early last month, we interviewed Brandon Sanderson, author of Mistborn, The Stormlight Archive, the guy who finished The Wheel of Time, eight times best-selling New York Times best-selling author, like mega figure in the field. Sat down for like a 45-minute interview with him, and it was his first like full spoiler discussion of the Cosmere, which is his big interconnected universe of stories since Wind and Truth came out in December of last year. It was a very, very exciting interview. And essentially this week, we're releasing the full interview over the weekend. And we've been kind of building up to it with little excerpts every day, which we've been sharing about things like the next Mistborn series he's working on, his short fiction collection he's working on that's coming out later this year, how fans reacted to Wind and Truth, which was a little bit divisive in the fandom. And stuff like that. The future of the Cosmere and whether it is inching more towards sci-fi or whether he'll still be able to do fantasy books. So yeah, it's very exciting times. And we just wanted to make sure you all knew about it because it's good stuff.
Yeah. Any big things that have left an impression on you from the interview? If you had to share one interesting factoid that you can, because we don't want to reveal anything too far.
Totally. I think there were a few because I've been a fan of Sanderson's work. I've been following his career for a decade. Mm-hmm. So I would say other hardcore fans of his, you will probably really like a lot of the stuff we talk about in this because my fan hat was definitely ooh, this is really cool. Nice. So I think some of the big things, Mistborn Era 3, which is Ghost Bloods. He talked about how he used he has a concept art. He has an art department now. We talked about kind of how it's different in his career, working on this book, which he's wanted to write for 20 years, this series. He's been planning it for a long time. And one of the things he signaled out was he essentially set his concept art department on making art for this modern era of Mistborn, because it's set in the equivalent of the modern day, for 6 months, just churning out cool Mistborn artwork.
Fun job.
Yeah, super fun job. One of the people he has doing that was a fan art. He found them through fan art and then hired them. So that was really cool. I think one of the other things I thought was very interesting, aside from just Wind and Truth talk, because he talked about some of the big twists of that,
The latest book in his Stormlight Archive series, right?
Yes. And it's the end of the first arc of the Stormlight Archive. So it was a big release. This thing. So people can't see this. I'll turn the camera. So this is Wind and Truth. I actually have two of the other ones under my laptop to raise it up for this podcast right now because they're very thick books. Talked about the secrets of Wind and Truth. The other thing, which I thought was the most interesting, was that the books in the Cosmere are going a little more and more sci-fi as it goes on, except the science is kind of the magical science of the Cosmere. So I basically asked him, will you still be doing epic fantasy, or are we in the sci-fi era? And he talked about how he expects to write still epic fantasy because he loves it, but the mainline Cosmere books will start to feel more and more like Dune style science fiction, where it's sci-fi, but it feels like a fantasy book. I thought was cool. And that there's an article about that up on the site today if people want to go read about it.
Yeah, very cool. Brandon Sanderson, the interview. Yes. Only at winteriscoming.net and the Winter Is Coming YouTube channel and the Winter Is Coming Facebook page and the Winter Is Coming Twitter account.
Yes.
And the Winter Is Coming Instagram.
Yes.
Maybe. Read it all. Watch it all.
Yeah. So that'll be coming this weekend if people want to watch the full thing or see the full thing. It's been really fun over on the r/Brandon Sanderson subreddit. We've been chatting in there throughout the week.
Very, very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what's up with Sanderson, Lance. Just wanted to let people know. Shall we carry on to the next thing?
Because this Friday, I think there is a brand new, very cool looking sci-fi show coming to Apple TV Plus, a streaming service that, for however many problems I might have with them, I guess I have a few, I will say I do appreciate that they seem to just keep trucking with green lighting and making and renewing these fairly large production genre shows. And I really like that. What are they making this Friday, Daniel? And have you seen it early?
Yes. Yes, I have seen the thing coming this Friday early, which is Murderbots, which is their new sci-fi series, which is based on the Murderbot Diaries by Martha Wells, which is a really, really popular book series. It's won like every major award you can win. You know, it kind of revitalized Martha Wells' career. And it stars Alexander Skarsgård as this, it's called a SEC unit, so for security unit. And it's kind of half machine and half organic tissue.
Cool.
So the premise of the show is this Skarsgård's character, which calls itself Murderbot. It hacked its own bit of technology that makes it have to listen to humans, but it can't let anyone find out because then it will get melted down because as defective. So it has free will, but it doesn't know what to do with it. And it's looking for its place in the universe while wishing it could ignore all the humans around it. And it just really wants to watch soap operas and television. It downloaded thousands of hours of media as one of its first things. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really fun show. It's a sci-fi comedy. It's
Which
half
is
hour.
Pretty rare.
It
like
is.
A successful sci-fi comedy.
Yeah, I feel like so watching this show, it was like a breath of fresh air because it's not weighty and heavy. Like it has some action, but like the jokes are ever present. Like each episode's got enough jokes in it that it's just fun all the way down. And they're light 20 to 30 minute episodes. So you kind of get in, you have a good time, and then you're left wanting more. Skarsgård is amazing as Murderbot. Very like deadpan, very awkward. Murderbot is kind of like neurodivergent coded in the way it acts, like doesn't like making eye contact. Like, so a lot of these things, and he's just is so, so good with the way he acts in that role. And he also narrates. So as Murderbot gives opinions a lot of times on the very stupid humans in its midst. And that's just a lot of fun and also feels like a cool way to honor the book series, which is in first person from Murderbot's perspective. So the picture we have up now, this is the Preservation Alliance team, which are basically a bunch of hippie scientists who buy Murderbot to go on this. They have to lease this SEC unit as part of an exploration contract from a greedy corporation to go explore a remote world. And you know, they have very different views on how SEC units should be treated in their hippie-ish planets. It's just a lot of fun. It's a good show. And I hope people like it because I liked it a lot.
I mean, you've read the books. I haven't.
I've only read the first one. I haven't read all of them.
Sure. And they're also novellas, so they're not that long, right?
Yes.
They're not like big, chunky Brandon Sanderson-esque novels.
Totally.
Honestly, the fact that it's a sci-fi comedy called Murderbot, I would basically already be there.
Yeah.
Sight unseen, but I've also liked the trailers. I like the talent involved. And it feels like it's going to be a hit to me. You know, sci-fi comedies, I can think of, I remember watching Avenue 5, which God bless them. HBO tried 2 seasons of that. Not good. Like a space crew ship blown off course, so to speak.
Yeah, just wasn't really funny. The first episode or two.
It just didn't click. I think Red Dwarf back in the day, before either of us were born, was a success that ran for a while. British sci-fi comedy.
Yeah,
but you don't really see a whole lot of them. And this one seems like it's come to this format very organically and honestly.
Yes.
And I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to like this a lot. I could just feel it.
Yeah, I have a feeling you will too. Like, you know, the title Murderbot, it's because this SEC unit calls itself this, thinking it should be a killing machine. Obviously it's a killing machine, but it doesn't want to be killing people. So like, it's all about these like delicious contradictions. Like, it hates having to deal with humans, but it's also like really drawn to humans because it's trying to understand itself. Sure. And yeah, I haven't seen a lot of like really successful sci-fi comedies. You know, The Orville started that way, and then it got
it became what it really wanted to be. Which was Star Trek, but the certain other filed off.
Yeah, essentially. This, like, I would say it's funnier. So I've only read the first novella. You're right, they are pretty short. I'm holding up the first omnibus. This is two of them. Nice. And it's only about 250 pages for both together. I think it, so from what I've read, the show is even funnier, and there are elements of it that work better on screen because Murderbot is obsessed with television and this is a TV show. So they do really fun things with that like the book just couldn't do. It wouldn't work as well. And one of those is this show Murderbot really likes to watch called The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon, which is like neon-drenched colors. It's very cheesy. It's got all these really ridiculous punchlines and hairstyles, and it's got a whole other guest starring cast who's only in the series to be in The Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon.
Jack McBayer there, 30 Rock, classic, very funny guy.
Yeah. Yeah, John Cho is in it. Clark Gregg from like Marvel, the Avengers. Oh, sure. And it's just a lot of fun. And I spoke with the showrunners. There's an interview up with them on the YouTube channel for Winter is Coming. And they talked about like being inspired by like David Lynch for this, where like they wanted to. Yeah, right. Like reeling you in a little bit here. They wanted to do something that like, if you took it out of context, would seem absurd and ridiculous. Mm. But like, there's still something artistic going on there that's going to speak to Murderbot, who has watched like 7,000 hours of this show. So it's very fun. I'm very excited to see people's reaction to it. And it's got a great Rotten Tomatoes score so far. I think it dropped on Rotten Tomatoes today with like 100%. I think it's down to like maybe not 96 now. But yeah. Good stuff.
Again, the only problem with it, by the way, yet and Valora's that pick is great. It kind of gave me like Jeff Goldblum in Thor Ragnarok vibes, like with his crazy hair and his outfit. But anyway, the only problem is the same thing with every Apple show. Like there are so many good ones,
mm-hmm.
and there are so many in the sci-fi space. The people over there, the producers, obviously. Just read a lot of, I don't know, Asimov when they were young, and they just are nerds. They're nerds over there at Apple. They want to make Foundation. They want to make Silo. They want to make Murderbot. They are nerds. But they're committed nerds, and they make it, and they make them good. The problem with them is I don't see enough advertising. I don't feel like enough people talk about Apple shows. Like the one, I guess Ted Lasso broke out a bit.
Sure.
And that's really about it.
I think Severance has been another decently large one. I mean, that is the hard thing with Apple streaming services, essentially their change that they found in the couch that they used to make this, because Apple is a tech company first and foremost. I don't know if you can hear it, my dog is howling. So if you hear weird noises behind me, that's what that is. But I think, you know, I often complain about this with like HBO or some of the other streaming services, that it feels like they're reaching for stuff and they don't quite know what things to adapt. Like if I had a quarter for every time, I've been like, why hasn't HBO done the Greenbone Saga, which is like Jade City, a fantasy crime syndicate show that's like absolutely perfect for their brand. Like, it's basically The Sopranos meets Game of Thrones on an Asian-inspired island. Like, make this show. With Apple, it's the opposite, where it's like they're picking really, really smart properties to do. Like you said, like Silo and Foundation and Murderbot, and they have a Godzilla show. Like,
it
feels like they made a choice to commit, at least partially, one part of their brand is like thought-provoking adult science fiction. And they're just going to double down on that and commit to it. And like, kudos them. Like, we were just talking about HBO getting a bunch of reality shows that felt super off brand, Apple's in the opposite camp where it's like, you really know your brand right now and you're sticking to it. So
like Severance, For All Mankind is right in there too.
Yeah.
Another great one.
Yeah, totally. And again, Foundation's coming back this year, and that one's been hit or miss, but it is, you know, they do at least deserve some credit for wanting to do a show based on like Isaac Asimov of all things.
Must have to try.
Yeah. So, I hope this show does well. I think, you know,
I think it will. I also like the idea of something that's a little less, I don't know, investment intensive from my end, like a half hour comedy.
Yeah.
That's also kind of made on the level, like production wise, something bigger. Could be something that could really appeal to a lot of people, I think. I think it'll do well. I know I'm going to enjoy it. I'm just going to assume. I'll set myself up for failure. And shout out to producer Richard, who apparently is a big Red Dwarf fan.
Nice. Yeah, this almost makes me kind of wonder. So, like, between this and Dunkin' Egg coming out, and I was all ready to compare these, but then HBO delayed Dunkin' Egg, so now I can't as much. But I almost feel like we could see a shift toward more studios wanting to do novellas instead of these big giant tomes they've been trying to adapt, because it does let them do, you know, shorter episodes or add more. Like, one thing I will say for Murderbot that I don't think is a huge spoiler that they've said publicly is that pretty much everything from the first novella is in this show. Like, it maps pretty clearly to the first book, but they had more room to play with it and do fun things like make the Sanctuary Moon show as an actual show. And I feel like that has potential for other studios to see it and be like, maybe there's something to this. Maybe we could do that too. But yeah, so the first two episodes drop this Friday, May 16th, and then it's one a week after that. It has a 10 episode run. Here's another good thing. It has an actual respectable number of episodes.
And, you know, I don't mind so much dropping two, not three at once, especially when the two are like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm much less amenable to Wheel of Time doing like, here's three episodes that are all an hour in one go. Here, enjoy.
Yeah.
Just respect my time.
Yeah. I loved Wheel of Time season three. I've seen it a bunch of times.
It was great.
I have never watched those three episodes in one sitting.
It's
too much. And I love them. They're great episodes, but it's, you know, it's like almost 4 hours because two of them are more than an hour.
What is Apple doing right? Like, do they just hire the right people, I guess? And Prime Video insisted on hiring some, I don't know. Like,
I don't know.
If like they got the marketing budget that, I don't know, an HBO or someone else has. I wish all the streaming services could link hands and just figure things out and get the right people in the right spots and combine with each other to some extent, so there's a few less of them, and just we would all live in a big, beautiful garden full of good television and movies and games and books. We would all, you know, laugh and sing and dance and watch and have fun. That's what I wish for us.
Yeah, I wish for that too. And we could all benefit. They could compare notes instead of competing, and we could all win. And the creators behind this, so it's Chris and Paul Weitz, who have kind of an eclectic filmography. I think they did like the first American Pie movie about a boy. One of them wrote on like Star Wars Rogue One. So they've kind of been all over the place. I don't know how many television shows they've done, but they've got a knack for it, because this, as episodic television, works really well. And I realized this when I watched a little bit of Daredevil Born Again too. Like, I'm tired of this is a 7 hour movie format for shows. I don't like that. I am starting to just like, when a show feels like a television show, I'm like, oh, thank God, that's so nice. And this is one of those.
Yeah, I like that too. Like, and again, if the story demands that you make it a 7 hour movie, make it a 7 hour movie.
Sure.
But if it doesn't, don't. I don't see what's so hard about this. I agree with Robert that that people at Prime Video probably don't, that they don't intend you to do all three. They don't intend for you to watch all three in one sitting, but to put in a space for the next week's episode or to be in the end of the story. I just think that dropping them all at once like that has that effect. I think it cuts down on anticipation. I think you need to do it on a case-by-case basis.
I agree with that.
And I think they seem to have like a one-size-fits-all model. no matter the show, first three, first day, and the rest 1 week. And 8 episodes per season. I think they can benefit from some flexibility.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, we are going to see, we have seen, and I think we will see more examples of when studios don't do a one-size-fits-all model, when they do what works best for a show, mm-hmm. it can make the show experience better for audiences and the show do better as a result of that. And I'm going to use that to segue into our What Are We Watching Here? Because one thing I know we've both watched is Andor, right?
Oh, you watched it?
I did. I was like, I'm not having a repeat of last week where we spoiled it for me. I'm going to stay up late and watch all three. So yes, I have seen Andor. We are going to talk about Andor a little bit. How spoilery is up to you, Dan.
Well, I was going to say, like, I did watch it. I don't think I would have been compelled to spoil everything for you today. So
that's
this
fair.
Is like that fable about the woman who sells her hair to buy her husband a gift, but he gets her like a beautiful hairnet. I forget how it goes.
What?
Irony. Anyway,
I see. I'm the maiden selling my hair. I got it. But you got me a hairnet, which is no spoilers.
Yeah. You have nice
got
hair.
It.
Very long.
Yeah.
I'm not sure people realize how long his hair is in the back.
I know. I always think about that on these calls. You can't really see it.
Yeah.
So the reason I transitioned with that is because Andor did a unique format and it worked really well for it, which is that it released episodes in blocks of three, but it wasn't just do it so that we have more streaming hours per week or whatever. It also fit the story because there was a year gap between each block of three. So like it feels intentional. It doesn't feel like Amazon has a mandate that we release three at once. It feels like they wanted to do it this way. And I think it was better for it.
I feel like I wanted to do it that way. I would have liked more separation in some of them anyway.
Okay.
Like those two last week where it was the Gorman Massacre followed by the great speech stuff.
Those could have used the space. Yeah.
I wanted to chill out between those. I did not want to just blast through them. I think it depends.
That's fair.
I don't think it's not one size fits all. Even this week, with these episodes felt a little more like a coda to the whole series.
Yes,
rather
I agree with
than
that.
Like the final sprint. I feel like the final sprint was last week with the Gorman Massacre and that big Senate speech. This felt more like it was putting a button on the show and kind of underlining the themes and letting you just kind of luxuriate and think about it for a bit. Although
yeah.
The first episode with Luthen was pretty intense and very
loved
good.
That.
But also it was inevitable, right? Like we all knew
he wasn't
was
making it
end up somehow like that.
Yes. Yeah, I thought, and it's funny. So right before watching that episode, my wife and I were like, man, I wish we had more backstory for Clea. I wish we knew more about Clea. And then we watched the episode. And it's like, oh, great. They knew we were going to feel that way at this point because that episode. Yeah, that was my favorite of the block was the 10th episode. I thought it was really, really strong. The actress, both the young and old actress who plays Clea, I thought were excellent. And what you said about it feeling like a coda is so on point. Feels like Cassian's story peaked last week. Mm-hmm. Feels like Dedra's story peaked last week.
Mon Mothma's story peaked last week. Yeah,
exactly. Totally. Mon Mothma wasn't even in a few of the episodes this time around. Mm-hmm. It was only in the finale.
Dude, they gave her full.
They did.
Return of the Jedi. Beatles bowl cut. That was fun.
Respect for them sticking to the bit. Yeah, totally. So Andor, now that it's done, if I had one complaint about Andor, which is only some, it's that this is a really good, powerful, thought-provoking, intelligent show. I guess I have two complaints about Andor, but let's start with this first one, which is the ending is very much an on-ramp into Rogue One.
Yeah.
And I like that because I'm going to watch Rogue One. I don't like that because it feels a little less powerful than it might have otherwise. And you can tell the people making this show had the chops that if they were going to actually cap it, they would have been able to do it well. But because they have Rogue One, they're working toward the cap is, and now Rogue One starts. Did that bother you? What did you think of that?
I didn't know quite what I was going to get from these final episodes. Not really, because the whole thing did feel, like I said, like a button, like a period, like a coda. So I wasn't expecting like a giant climax, so I was okay with it. Also, let's remember, Rogue One was a $1 billion movie. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like that, like it looms that large in the mind, but it was a giant special movie. So I guess paying homage to it in the end is appropriate. It didn't really bother me that much. I wanted more time with Deidre, or at least I thought I did.
Me too.
I wanted more resolution, but that's it. That final shot of her in prison was very satisfying. And I thought, I was kind of like, you know what? Maybe I didn't need more.
Yeah, I feel like the lack of Deidre in these final episodes, and she did have good stuff here, but she wasn't the focus. And I feel like that's almost a meta intentional thing for how the Empire treats her here at this 11th hour, which is she's brutal. Dedicated her life. She's this perfect model of imperial ambition and working for the Empire, committing atrocities on their behalf, like on Gorman. Like, she was one of the masterminds of what happened on Gorman. She pulled the trigger, as it were.
Well planned.
And here they are just totally casting her off because she messed up, because she got too ambitious at the end. I wish there was a little bit more of her too, but I loved that final shot of her.
It was really good.
Where she ended up. And I think underplaying her here at the end does kind of drive home the, you're unimportant to the thing you have devoted your life to. You are unimportant and you're an afterthought in this saga. And isn't that unfortunate for you? What a good show. I'll miss it.
Burn bright, but briefly. Yeah. Julie's watching The Last of Us, which she is enjoying. Yeah. Walking Dead Dead City, which she is enjoying. Mobland, which she thinks is fantastic. I don't know what Sullivan's Crossing is, but I will soon.
Me neither. So Last of Us had a big episode this week too. The fifth episode.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was all about that last scene for me where Ellie beats Nora to death with a pipe.
Yeah.
While bathed in red light and dead shark eyes. That was great. I mean,
yeah.
Great in, you know what I mean? It was very effective and chilling.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this story needs. Like, The Last of Us Part 2 game is a revenge story, and it's all about Ellie going on this journey to avenge Joel, and eventually kind of having the belated realization, I've done a lot of horrible stuff in the service of this. So we needed stuff like that scene. Like, that's an important scene. I feel like this episode... I have seen the whole thing, but this is one of my favorites of the season. And a lot of it's that last scene. I feel like it does zip through a little quick. Like, I didn't expect us to get the hospital, the Seraphites in the woods, you know, those stalkers in the warehouse running into soldiers. Like, it was a lot of stuff all in this one episode to get to that final moment with Ellie and Nora and the introduction of spores, which, you know, in the video game, it's airborne the way people get infected. The show had these weird little tendril things, and now they've finally introduced the spores in a story-based way that I like. I think it makes sense. So, like, that hospital, without going too deep into spoilers, we will see that hospital basement again if it sticks to the game, and there's a reason that it is as messed up as it is. Story-wise. I really liked all of that. I thought it was a good episode for Bella Ramsey and Isabella Merced, who remains excellent. I think this was one of my favorite episodes of the season. Here's an interesting comment. So Under Skyline says, I have not been enjoying The Last of Us for many reasons. Why do they continue to write Ellie as an obnoxious brat? It's irritating. That's not how she is in the game at this point. Cannot invest.
You know, I've seen that criticism going around that she's like a brat. And I guess I just don't see it. Like, I don't really... How is she being a brat?
When's the last time you played the game?
Years ago.
Okay, so I restarted the video game right after I watched this season. And while I do think the way Ellie acts is consistent for the way she's been portrayed in the show, in the video game, she's almost a different character by this point in her life. She's like a quiet, almost like Gen X kid, you know, not not cracking jokes all the time. She'll like say quiet jokes, but the, I will say the one thing I don't love about Bella Ramsey in this season is I think they do a much better job at portraying like Ellie's playfulness mm-hmm. and humor than like Ellie as a monster. And I think that's a thing the game obviously does really well. They can animate her how they want, but also the actress playing Ellie in the game, Ashley Johnson, just captured that a little bit better, I think. So I understand that criticism, even if I don't think she's necessarily bratty Ellie in the show. I do think she is different than game Ellie was, for sure.
I'm willing to believe that, but I mean, the season, and I haven't seen the entire thing like you, but mm-hmm. like Ellie is a monster. Isn't that the point of that last scene of this episode? Because I definitely felt she was pretty damn monstrous in that bit. I was pretty spooked. Her was her eyes, man. They're these like dead, blank, bottomless wells. It looked really good.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that is one of, if not her most monstrous scene of the season, is the one with Nora. And I also think, in terms of Ellie's darkness, probably the best one Bella Ramsey did is that scene. So yeah, we'll see how people feel in these last two episodes, because there are only two more left. But yeah, I think that's it was a good one. I understand that criticism, but I'm still enjoying it. It's still fun to see this brought to the screen. I just wish we didn't need to wait so long for season three, presumably. My hope is that, so that not filming until 2026 came from one of the actors, came from Isabella Merced. My hope is that they'll film other stuff not involving Isabella Merced before that. But
did you mean we'll next see. Month? I could be down with that.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's kind of like they renewed it for season three before season two even aired. What's the point of doing that if you're not going to get rolling quickly on the next season?
If I had an answer, I'd tell you.
Yeah.
I also want to see the Gilded Age season three. I kind of do too. I'll watch that. That is my guilty pleasure show. I like it, but I wish I didn't like it as much. I almost saw Audra McDonald when I was in New York City this past weekend in a play on Broadway, but then her understudy was on. So we got refunds and went somewhere else.
So you got, wow, that's harsh. You got refunds because of the understudy?
I was there to see Audra, the Gilded Age star Audra. But no, it worked out. We went across the street to we saw a different play never heard about called Purpose. It was great.
Nice. That definitely fits in the what are we watching. I'm glad it was a good time, albeit an unexpected one.
Great time.
The only other thing I'll toss in here just very quickly at the end, I'm still playing Clair Obscur Expedition 33. It remains amazing, that game. It is just a top tier RPG, I think. And that apparently, they already signed a film adaptation deal back in like January. Really? So we'll probably be hearing a lot more about that game in the coming months and years. But yeah, we're pushing the hour here.
We should get
shall
to
we lightning the, round.
Do lightning round, or we go over stories we didn't get to the main part of the show. Give our 20-second opinions, more or less.
Yes. Why don't I ask you first?
Okay.
I don't think I hardcore ordered these. They're only mildly ordered. So the Old Guard 2 is coming out on July 2nd, and I'll have Charlize Theron versus Uma Thurman.
That's a cool idea. I liked the first Old Guard movie. It was kind of an unexpected action hit. Mm-hmm. Immortals battling it out, Highlander, but make it modern. And Charlize Theron's a great action star. Uma Thurman, Kill Bill's a great action star. That's cool. I'll probably watch that. That sounds interesting to me. I'll probably check that out.
Yeah, totally. Whoever wanted Uma Thurman for that, get that person a raise.
That's
great idea.
Daniel, the second season of Fallout has finished filming and the show has been renewed for season three.
Yeah, talk about a studio powering ahead on more seasons. Love to hear this. I was shocked. I thought this can't be right. And then I saw that it is in fact right. Fallout. I believe it got a release date too. I think it's coming out in December, and then season three, they're going to start working on it as soon as they can. Like hell yeah. Fallout, more studios do this. Here's one people have been waiting for a long time. This is DC news. So Peacemaker season 2, it has a premiere date. It's premiering on August 22nd, which is right after Superman from James Gunn, which got a new trailer today, which is coming out in July.
James Gunn is ascendant. I watched Superman trailer. I didn't watch Peacemaker 1. I thought it looked pretty good. I'll probably see it. You know, I wasn't a giant fan of the Zack Snyder era. I know some folk love it to death. I'm ready for a bouncier, happier take on this story. Sure. And James Gunn has a good track record. So rock on, new cast. Like Nicholas Holt is bald. Okay. Dan, new Lord of the Rings movie, The Hunt for Gollum, is coming out December 17th, 2027.
Yeah. So The Hunt for Gollum, that is all about Gollum and Aragorn and Gandalf searching for him before the Lord of the Rings. I'm very mixed on this. Andy Serkis will direct and star in it. Cool. We will see if it should be subtitled The Hunt for Gollum, The Hunt for Yet More Money.
Request for more money. All right.
Yes. All right. Dan, Amazon and Sony are reportedly, quote, pretty close to renewing the Wheel of Time for season 4.
Yeah, that's according to a YouTube channel called What Up. Great name, Wheel of Time channel, managed by a guy named Jonathan. He says he has sources that are kind of, he didn't really name them, like close to the show. I'm willing to go with it. Apparently he was saying that it's contract negotiations. They're renegotiating things because the environment is very different than it was back when they greenlit the stuff. As long as they greenlit it, I'm fine.
Yeah, totally.
Now, hopefully. Daniel, I know you're looking forward to this. Alien Earth, the TV show about Alien, got a release date. It premieres on FX and Hulu and apparently Disney Plus on August 12th.
Yeah, I've been cautiously worried about this show, but the pictures look cool. There are a bunch of new images. I don't think we got a full trailer yet. It's set on Earth, which is the only reason I'm like, I don't know about this. Them not getting to Earth was the whole point of the movies. But it's from Fargo creator Noah Hawley. Pretty cool. I will be watching it and at least giving it a chance.
Alien superfan.
Yes. All right, Dan. So HBO has reportedly cast Harry, Ron, and Hermione for its new Harry Potter show, but they're keeping the announcement quiet for now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they had, because they've cast other folk. Filming, I think, starts this year. So everyone knows they're going to cast those three big roles, and everyone knows that once they find out who they are, they're going to be all over them, and everyone knows they're going to get rich, and everyone knows they might develop complexes, as child actors do, or not. The original three got through it pretty good. So when they get announced, just be decent and civil to these children, whoever they are.
Yeah. Remember, they are children. It's not their fault.
I won't probe into that. Finally, we already talked about this, but I want to hear your take on it. Why not? Another 20 seconds railing against it.
Yeah.
They're changing Max back to HBO Max after it was HBO Max before, then HBO Go before that, and HBO Now before that.
Yeah, didn't expect us to talk about this so much earlier in the show, but here we are because it's that frustrating that HBO had their very nice streaming service brand tanked by their corporate overlords, and now their corporate overlords have realized maybe that was a bad decision and we should put Dr. Pimple Popper elsewhere, and it will soon be HBO Max. I love that they announced it with a Jon Snow gif.
Oh, I mean, it was kind of cute, but also it was like, stop trying to be charming. Like, you're just a stupid thing. I'm trying to fool me into liking this. It didn't work.
Like, nice.
The corporate overlords get paid way too much to make these kind of dumb decisions. That's also frustrating.
It's true. It's true. Take some of that money and give it to the Battle of the Gullet.
All right. Or more episodes. Ooh. Or quicker episodes. Or renewing things early. Just, God. Anyway, we've been Take the Black. We're two men named Dan. We're on here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST. Here in the Winter is Coming Facebook page, the Winter is Coming YouTube channel, or read what we write at winteriscoming.net or .com. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, download our podcast wherever podcasts are downloadable. And we'll be back next week for more Take the Black Live Max. No, wait, just Take the Black Live.
Nice. Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.